accession number 23228, reel 7.
Professor Hugh de Wardener, and this is reel 7.
We're getting towards the end of Tarkanoon. During our stay at Tarkanoon, the railway was eventually completed. And from then on, things were much better, there's no question about it. There was very little work, but an enormous amount of sickness to be dealt with. And gradually, the camp began to be emptied. It was the Christmas, it must be the Christmas of 43, are we? 44. No, it must be the Christmas of 43. It's the Christmas of 43. We had a pantomime, and it was rather fun. We had other things like this later on in bigger situations, but where the stream, the torrent, coursed through the valley, when it turned a corner, it left a swept out piece of the mountainside with a sandy bottom. So you could put the stage or build up the stage on the bottom, and then the audience sat on the banks. So it was a natural amphitheater and on the floor. And in Chiang Kai, in fact, we did this, and you could sit 2,000 people. But in this camp, it was only about, 500, 700, maybe a bit more. And we had a wonderful, you don't want to know dirty little rhymes, do you? Do you? You don't mind? No, why? Because there's rather history. I played the Fairy Queen in this pantomime. And we had a highly rehearsed entrance. We wanted a puff of smoke. Well, of course, we didn't know how to do a puff of smoke, but we had a Cambridge biochemist with us. And he had the bright idea of heating up some water and throwing it on some stones. Oh, no, I think he heated up some stones and threw some water on, that's right. And he had dug a little trench at the back of the stage, and from the wings, at the right moment, he threw this water on, and I, stepping in my bare feet, rather high above all this, came through the smoke, the steam, to the front of the stage. And I had a couplet to sing. Now, the couplet had some history. It had been invented, or done at least, in the First World War, in a POW camp, by a man who was a prisoner of war again, having been in the First World War a prisoner. And he was in this camp, and he gave us this couplet. So I felt there was a sense of tradition about my rendering of this. And the couplet went, "In me you see the Fairy Queen. I used to play Miss Muffet. But now I have a little wand. Don't tell me where to stuff it." And you know, there was a terrible pause. One, two, three, four. Oh my God, it's gone flat. And then, a huge... There was the doctor, you see, dressed up very quick. And it was a marvellous entrance. Nothing will ever beat it again. That's when I started getting into the entertainment industry, because I from then on, I did more and more theatre work. As we concentrated down at Chiang Kai, you'll hear about later, there were a lot of patients, but there were a lot of doctors too. So one just worked in the morning and nothing to do much in the afternoon. And I did another thing at Tarkanoon. I did a marvellous dance with a very young man, very light bloke. And we did a spoof dance. We were sort of flying through the air, not catching each other and that sort of thing, you know, landing, because there's lovely sand to land on. And I remember we rehearsed this for 15 hours. And the thing only lasted 4.5 minutes. So, you know, we took it seriously. But we did get a lot of laughs. It was very good. It was very good. There was one man, Gus, somebody or other, who had the concertina. And that made a tremendous difference. That was the music. I mean, he played it.
Were you able also to get costumes? For instance, one, the mind boggles, you know, with you as the...
It was mosquito nets. The Japanese mosquito nets were green. Great big green things. There were a lot of that. And there was the border of it, which was cloth, and then there was the net itself. And so that, I think a star, I don't know. I had a wand and a star.
Would the Japanese come to something like that?
To that one, I can't remember. Certainly later on, you'll hear about the Japanese, and there's quite a long history, a great insight into the Japanese mind through these entertainments. Any other entertainments there? No. The sick were gradually sent back, mostly on pom-poms. Now, pom-pom were called so because they're two-stroke engined, sort of baby barges. And as they go up the river, they go pom-pom-pom-pom-pom-pom-pom-pom-pom. So they were known as pom-poms. Perfectly wonderful title. And they went back on, which was nice for them. All they had to do was lie back. But I remember some of them worrying like mad if they were going to get a relapse or not during the trip. And I remember a great patient I'd had for a long time, very, very sick, skin and bones. And I was very worried whether he'd make the trip. On the other hand, I thought he'd better get down. Best thing for him. And when I got back to Chunkai and I saw him there, he's looking a bit better, I said, how did it get on the trip? He said, didn't go once for 3 days. So something happened. Boom, stopped. Saved the day. Yes. And so we got rid of, gradually, they all went back. A lot went back, all the sick. And then we were shunted down in trains. And now this is, of course, this is where we remembered all the logs that we put in the cuttings, you see, hoping that none of them would give way at this moment. Because it's very, you know, we were going over bridges which we'd made, and they're pretty, you know, bridges, they're pretty delicately made in those days. And I remember I was exhausted. And I eventually thought, I can't stand the crowding in here. I got onto the roof of the truck, which was rounded. And I eventually put my head on one end, one side, and my feet the other, to lie down. And you know I went to sleep. I woke up, and as the train went left, I started to slide over this way. And as it went right, I started to slide over this way. And I woke up, and I mean, it was all right when I was awake. It wasn't very bad. But suddenly in the middle of this, I woke up. I thought, oh my God, I must get off this. This is terrible. I could easily have slipped away, you know. And we finally got to Chunkai. And I think...
Before we get to Chunkai, could I ask you a little more about the people who went off to work? You know, the sick people. You were saying when Speedo sort of advanced.
I mean, I think basically we can say that everybody was sick. It was a question of how sick. I mean, nobody was fit. As I said earlier, I think one had recurrent malaria, so was either going to get one or just had an attack. Dysentery we'd all had, and likely to have recurrences. And the malnutrition was there the whole time. So there was that. Plus the incessant tiredness of working in this tremendous heat from dawn to dusk. They went out before the sun was up and they came back after the sun was set. So that, I mean, that by itself, if you had 3 meals a day and not ill, that would have exhausted most people. But they had that on top of malnutrition and diseases. So that everybody was sick. But some were more sick than others. And the job of the doctor was to try and contain the sickest in hospital. And the Japanese would have parades of the people in hospital and just take them away. And I believe, though it didn't happen in our camp, but there were other camps where the sick were taken out on stretchers because they couldn't walk. And had to try and break a stone or two or something, you know. But I say, I didn't see that. I read about it or heard about it.
In your case, though, were very sick people taken out to work?
Bound to be, yes. I mean,
Was there, you know, did you try to do anything? Was there anything
There's nothing you could say except that these people are not fit to go out to work. There's nothing else you could say, you could do. You could go on about it, and they just take them away. That's all.
There would be no chance of very sick people having a shorter working.
No. Do you ever see that awful film, The River Choir? Oh.
Why do you say awful?
Well, my wife and I went to see it, and luckily enough, there were only two seats in the theatre left, separately, so that she didn't have to sit through me ranting about it as it was going on. But it was a ludicrous film. I mean, there were several good bits to it. The camp looked real. The camps looked real. No question about that. But all the prisoners were so well fed. There was one prisoner who was a bit thin, and I noticed they always had him dead centre in the camera. He was always put in the middle. His rib showed a bit, but that was all. But there were ludicrous things. For instance, the doctor. Now, come on. A doctor has infinite powers in the army. If I don't think the colonel's fit for work, I can say so, and he has to stop. That's that. Now, here was this nut who was doing these things, making better bridges and trying to get all the men. And the doctor just sitting by, and are letting all these men, and some of the sick, remember? The nips were taking the sick out, and the doctor was standing by. I thought that was insulting to the doctors that had been there. I really did. People thought that we behaved like that. And then, of course, the end. You have three pretty girls with machine guns and so on. Come on, come on. And then, Alec Guinness, whom I love dearly, I must admit, wonderful actor. But he, when at the extremes of emotion, he only had one way of behaving. And that was to walk very stiffly forward with his legs a bit stiff. And he did it on two occasions that I saw him do it. And one was in a play about Lawrence of Arabia, after he'd come away from being buggered. And he walks away from the room in this style. And the next time was in this film, when he's been put in a hole in the ground with a piece of iron thing. Ridiculous that he could walk at the end of 2 days under there. Obviously he couldn't possibly walk. He couldn't stand up. But he walked. And he walked exactly the same way. So it was a bit silly, you know, that the two completely different things made him walk exactly the same way. What else? The Japanese colonel in that film insulted the Japanese engineer in front of the prisoners. Come on, hey, never do that. They were trained by the Prussians, the Japanese, and they had the Prussian, yes, courtesies and Prussian manners, you know, for better or for worse, but they wouldn't do that. Oh, there are all sorts of things which are irritating. And, of course, all the men thought the colonel was wonderful. Now, come on. 800 Englishmen all think the same about anything? This was a contentious thing. But about something good, you wouldn't find 800 people agreeing. And this was highly contentious. It was ridiculous. I mean, come on, a little reality, they would have had a bunch who questioned it or said something. This is the point. The whole thing was, you know how it came about? It was a Frenchman who invented the story. He had this idea of a person who was so driven by some aim that he would push it in the face of all sorts of obstacles and difficulties. The aim was the important thing. And after the war, he went to see his friends. He had some friends in Malaya, planters, who had been POWs. And they started talking about their experiences as prisoners. And he had the bright idea of putting his idea in a POW setting. That's how it came about. So he knew nothing about the setup at all.
Yes, it raises this question, doesn't it? Does anyone really understand, can you fully understand the experience somebody like yourself had, you know, through listening to people talking or, you know, trying to visualise it? Do you actually have to experience it yourself to appreciate the full...
No, but one shouldn't get factual things wrong. No. I mean, I think... Did you ever see that series on television of the women? Now, that was much more real. Much nearer to it. I mean, I wasn't in a women's camp, I wasn't a woman. But I got the feeling, perhaps they would argue that... You see, I wasn't with them. And I feel it was real, but... One got much, much closer to it than the River Kwai did.
What was the state of the men, you know, when they came back from a working day? Did you have anything to do with them then?
No, but I mean occasionally I was absolutely exhausted. But incredibly, you could hear people playing cards and laughing. Yes. Mm.
Did you ever go up the railway for any reason? You know, were you ever called up?
No. You mean during the day?
Yes.
No.
Yes. What sort of signs of it would you have known from where you were in the sort of hospital area of the railway? Would it have been anywhere near you? The
railway itself in Takanu, none. I mean, there was just the railway passing the edge of the camp. That's all I ever knew of it. When the railway was built, I get back to Chiang Kai, then I go up again. There, one wandered. I went for long walks. There was a little camp in the middle of the jungle, this good nip, and you could go where you liked. You couldn't escape, and nobody cared where the doctor was. And I used to go for long walks. I used to sometimes go along the railway. And wonderful sight, because at the side of the railway where they dug, there was fresh earth, it was still fresh, and butterflies by the thousands would be resting, and you'd throw a pebble in, and it was like one of these, like a snowstorm coming upwards at you. The other things that butterflies did, they flew along the railway in a queue, one behind the other, for, you know, 50 or 60 yards long, queue of butterflies. Wonderful sight. Yes, well, that's not exactly the bit of railway you're looking for, but...
Were there any escapes from this?
Any what?
Any escapes?
No.
Did anyone ever try?
Yes. I never knew the details, but there were at least two lots, and they were both brought back. Some were summarily executed, and others were tortured and executed. I remember one lot. They were parked outside the guard room when we came back from somewhere. Yes, there's a lot that I've got to explain about Chiang Kai later on, which comes into this. But there were wood. I used to often go on wood parties, kind of one way of getting out of the camp and having a little exercise and so on, which was fun. And I came back. I remember these three. Terrible sight to see them waiting. They knew exactly what was going to happen to them.
Did they make you watch any of this?
No.
The executions or the torture?
No, thank God. I'm not certain. The colonel... I think they asked the colonel to witness an execution and he wouldn't. I think I've heard that. I'm not certain. Well, I read it in John Coates' book. Have you read any of the books? You have. Did you read John Coates' book? The very first one. Terrible title. The Railway of Death. Oh, Lord. These publishers. He wanted to call it The Emperor's Shovel, which was much better, I think.
So could I ask you now a little more about the evacuation? You did mention your trepidation as you set off on the train because of the sabotage.
Yes, we put the people put large logs into the embankments, and of course That had been a great idea, sabotage. We hadn't thought, of course, that we might be riding on the railway later on. But I must go back to Tarkanum before I leave it, so to speak, because of one or two things that happened there which I haven't mentioned. One particular one, which is ironic in a way. It was, you know, we had Batman in those days. I don't know if they have had Batman in the army now. Do they? They still have Batman. Well, they're very useful, particularly to a doctor, because you don't have to worry about your food or where you're going to sleep or anything. You can get on with the job, and then when you're finished, you can quickly have something to eat and go back and so on. And I had a Batman when I was in England, a fellow called Brown. I'm sorry, I can't remember his Christian name. And he was a meticulous person, a bit depressed, I think, very quiet, and very good, and he drove the car. And when we got to as POWs, I can't remember what relationship I had with him. I don't remember him until we get to Tarkanum. I have a feeling that he was no longer batting for me at all. But I do meet him up again, and I'll explain how this happened, in Tarkanum. And I think because the railway was built, things were much more relaxed, I then took on a batman in Tarkanum. This was one way. The officers were paid more than the men. A lot of the officers' pay went towards getting food for the hospital and so on. One obviously did have a little bit more than anybody else. So one way of dispensing it was to have a batman and pay him. And so there are these two people who were each batman at one time to me, who both died in Tarkanum, and they both died because of their own personality. It was a really little Greek tragedy in for each one. And the reason the first one, Brown, died was that while he was in Chiang Kai, he had collected for a rainy day a set of tins of food, which he had purchased over the months. And he put them in his haversack, and they weighed a ton. And he then had to walk, and I can't remember how long it was, 50, 70 miles, up to the next camp where we were. And he was suffering from malnutrition, and he'd had diseases like everybody else. And this heavy sack ulcerated his back. And the ulceration grew, and he died from it. Now, it was his meticulous attention to the future, worrying about the future, thinking about the day it might rain when it was pouring. Poor fellow. And I never forgotten, because somebody said, Brown is in tent so-and-so. I didn't even know he was in the camp. And he's very sick. And they knew that I had known him. So I remember going to the tent and seeing him and hearing this story, or getting it out of him. He didn't put it like that, of course. And then I saw his back. And I said, how did you get that? And he explained that it was his haversack. And I said, what was in it? Oh. So, right. And the second one, I don't remember his name at all. He was a professional thief. That was his life. And we were regaled by stories of his thieving all around London. And of course, it's quite a good idea to have a batman, somebody who's a thief. You lack for nothing. He was very amusing in a coarse, rather coarse, cruel way. Now, when the cholera epidemic started, or in fact, just before it started, we saw corpses coming down the river. And one of the great instructions was nobody was to go into the river anymore, because otherwise one went swimming in it or bathed in it and so on. And right at the beginning of the cholera epidemic, before I think we'd had any cases of our own, or perhaps we'd had one or two, and our huts were overlooking, about 30 or 40 feet on a bank, overlooking a pool. And I was looking into this pool, and there was my batman in the water, and taking the water in his mouth and spouting it out like some sort of fish. He was, you see, his life had been never to be like anybody else, always to break any rule, pay no attention. And he was dead within 3 days. Now, each one of those died because of their personality. It's fascinating. It was a, you know. Right, well, that's what I wanted to say about Tarkana, which I'd missed. Now the trip down was a bit hairy, I must admit. The Sikh were sent ahead mainly in pom-poms because the river was up and the pom-poms had come up and then took it. It was a harrowing ride, but anyhow it wasn't a physically difficult one for them, except that they were stuck on the boat for 2 days and nights. But as I think I explained earlier, one of my patients who had very severe dysentery and whom I saw again at Tarkanoon, and I'd wondered how on earth he'd manage, he said he didn't have one stool from the beginning of the trip to the other. His gut just suddenly went quiet during the whole thing. And so it must have been a terrible trip for a lot of them. We were evacuated on the train, and it was very packed. And did I talk to you about lying on the roof? Yes, I did. This was the occasion on coming back, and we were in the dark. And I got very sleepy, and I lay across the roof from my body at right angles to the direction of the train. And I didn't mean to go to sleep, but I suddenly woke up. And I realized that as we went left, my head went further and further over. And then we went right, my feet went further. And I was so frightened that I'd nearly been shunted off into the jungle that I kept very well awake after. Then I was afraid that if I sat up, a branch would hit me. So I had to lie down. But eventually we got to Tarkanoon. Now, Tarkanoon, by now, was a huge camp.
Had you not just left?
I'm sorry, no, Chiang Kai. We left Tarkanoon and went to Chiang Kai. Chiang Kai by now, which was the original camp, if you remember that I had involved with diphtheria, was now a huge camp. And I don't know how many people there were, 5,000 or something like that, perhaps fewer. Many, many long, long huts everywhere. And a lot of doctors, we were all compressed down into this camp. And there wasn't very much to do for doctors, really. Everybody was gradually recovering. The food was better. We were near the base, where the food was more ample. And there was leisure. There was very little work going on. And so I remember that I only worked in the morning in a very leisurely way.
The men, were they working?
No, I'm sure they weren't. I mean, I don't remember specifically. There was nothing to work on. The railway was built, and there might have been parties doing this, that, and the other, but they were relatively... I mean, there'd be the wood party and so on. Oh, there's a story. I once joined the wood party, and this is where I learnt about ironwood. I don't know if you've ever met ironwood. Well, the wood parties were fun, because you got out of the camp this way. And of course, one had to go further and further away to get the wood, because the wood around the camp had been all taken up. And this was for the cookhouses. And I went, and I found a tree with a huge branch overlooking the river. The river was in spate, flowing fast, and it was about, 50 yards across, something like that. And I had a saw, so I sat on this branch and I sawed it. And the idea was it was going to drop into the water, and then I'd follow it down, push it to the cookhouse. This was the usual system. Well, it took a very long time to saw this branch. It was terribly hard. But I'm not a very good timber man. It didn't mean anything much to me. Anyhow, I cut this big branch off. It took me a long time. It, down into the river it went and disappeared. It never appeared again.